Welcome to the second podcast for the Cover 2. I'm J-Mac. We're joined by our boy Tim Kelly, and then pinch hitting for the realist is our boy Matt. The realist is supposedly swamped. He didn't say if it was work. He didn't say what it was, but I do believe that we have to mock him for missing only the second podcast, so this is us officially doing that.
It's pretty poor.
It is pretty, pretty poor. It's pretty poor. It's kind of sad.
I heard he's working on his unfinished screenplay for the Gilmore Girls movie.
Really?
Yeah.
That could be good. You know, there's a lot of money in that, I think.
Yeah, I don't think enough has been done with the Gilmore Girls.
They haven't been marketed well at all.
Right, exactly.
You got a thing for the Gilmore Girls, don't you, John?
It's a well-written show, and if the realist can bring some clever, witty lines to it, then I'll tune in. And it has Lauren Graham, I'm not going to lie.
That's what I meant by thing.
Well, yeah. She is in the top five. I'm not going to lie about that. Today, though, it is sad he is missing it because today is Talk Like a Pirate Day. September 19th.
We gave that up a long time ago.
We missed that at work, and I was really sad because we blew it out last year.
Nice.
So, but alas, well, I suppose we'll talk some football here. We're going to talk about the incredibly overmarketed yet nonetheless satisfying Separation Saturday. I don't understand how we can have Separation Saturday just 2 or 3 weeks into the season, but still, pretty cool. So the first game we'll talk about, a little Notre Dame-Michigan. Tim and I picked Notre Dame.
I gotta say, I picked Michigan.
Of course you did.
You were horrifically correct in that because Notre Dame looked horrible.
Yeah, they really did. They just from the beginning, couldn't get anything going. Michigan had too much pressure on them. Brady Quinn, not a Heisman Trophy winner this year.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to bounce back from that.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, don't you think that, I mean, this is their big first, this three or four games, the four games, I guess, the toughest four. And then he has about seven games in a row where he could just throw four or five touchdowns every single game.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now, and that's, you know, in November, if they beat Michigan State and then they run all the way up to USC, he's going to be talked about the Heisman again. This is, I know right now it seems like, oh my gosh, Notre Dame's awful and everyone hates him. But, you know, if he has 35 touchdowns going in against USC, blows it out there and they win a win there, which I don't think they will. But if they do, then he wins the Heisman.
Yeah, and it's going to be, I mean, if Notre Dame had to lose for both their national title hopes and both for Brady Quinn winning the Heisman, I mean, this was the game to do it. It's only the third game of the season for him. But, I think it'll be a little harder for Quinn because he can blow the doors off of it. But you still got to think Troy Smith's going to probably take Ohio State unbeaten.
I mean, Troy Smith won the big game against Texas, and he's probably going to win the big game against Michigan. And that's something Brady Quinn hadn't been able to do yet at Notre Dame, especially with Charlie Weiss there. Where's the big game win?
Yeah,
except for what? Fiesta Bowl.
Brady Quinn does have the Pope on his side now.
He does. That is a good call.
He's actually up for sainthood.
It's
going to be hard to be like, Troy Smith, you win the Heisman. Sorry, St. Brady.
That's true. That's true.
I can say that because I'm Catholic.
I know. We're just Baptists. We're gonna stay out of that one. I think it will be a little harder for him to do that because right now their biggest win is over Navy last year was 8-4. Now it doesn't mean I think Weiss is a good coach and I think they're gonna bounce back and I think they'll beat Michigan State and I think they'll go 9-2 this year. They'll lose to Southern Cal probably, but it's one of those things where you know there wasn't I would say the same amount of hype and the same amount of enthusiasm behind Willingham when he first got there, but they did start out, 6-7-0? And then they had, the following year, they had that make-or-break time where they lost a couple of games. They had, I think, a disappointing showing against someone like Washington or Washington State. And then all of a sudden, they reeled off 3 or 4 losses in a row, and that was where everybody lost faith. So you got to wonder if that mindset's kind of creeping back in or if Weiss has changed it. And I think the Michigan State game is going to be a testament. And Michigan State's good. I mean, they beat them last year.
I think Willingham and Weiss have the same record after this. After 14 games, I think they're now both 11-3 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think Notre Dame, you know, I think Weiss is different than Willingham.
Well, he's,
How's that for analysis?
I like that. That's good.
He is different.
special, even, I would say.
Kids good.
But I was now what surprised you the most about Notre Dame and that loss?
Oh, that they had no offensive line to protect Brayton. Mm-hmm. He never had time to throw all day long. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was being rushed all day long. And they don't have an all-day-long back.
That's what I noticed.
You know, I mean, if they're getting pressure on you with the passing game, you hand it off to the running back, and you change the tempo up. And they didn't have that to go to.
And Walker's a good back, and he fits what Weiss does well because he's very good at catching the ball in the backfield. But last year, and this might come back to bite him, you know, they were kind of in a bind. They moved Travis Thomas to linebacker because of his athletic ability. He gave him some more versatility on the defensive side. But he was also that complement to Walker last year. He was the, I want to say the power back, but he gave us someone who was, he wasn't as quick as Walker was, but he was definitely a change of pace for him. So I think not having that back, because I think their receivers are about the best in the country probably. I mean,
yeah, they're pretty good. I mean, Samardzija is... I don't think he's as good as everybody thinks he is. He's not as quick as everybody thinks he is.
No, but you put it in his direction.
He's got great hands.
He's going to catch it.
Yeah, if he's got to go up for it, he can make a good play on the ball. But
no, but he doesn't look like a shark as much as everyone thinks he is.
He doesn't exactly have a breakaway speed. Nick Knight's a good receiver, though. But now, what impressed you most about Michigan in that game?
Oh, man, their special teams and their defense. Mm-hmm. They were quick. And they were making plays on the ball. It was just, it was fun to watch.
Yeah, they were,
I mean, they were ready for that game.
They were kind of freakish, too.
They really were. They came into Notre Dame, into South Bend, saying, we're going to pound you guys.
Well,
it was a physical game.
I was doing some yard work for the family that day, and Matt sends me a text message at the second quarter that says Notre Dame up or Michigan up 27-7. I was thinking, that can't be right.
Oh, I was shocked.
So,
I think what surprised me most about the game is that the Augusta YMCA beat the University of South Carolina in 1894, 16-4.
Now, that surprises me too, being an Augusta native. However, I'm not sure how that's connected to the Notre Dame-Michigan game.
Oh, it's... I'll get back to you on that.
Okay, you work on that. But we're going to move on a little bit, lest we devote all of our time to the Fighting Irish and the Wolverines, to talk about the defensive slugfest that was the LSU-Auburn game. Tim and I were correct in our picks on that one. We picked Auburn, and did the realist have LSU?
I can't remember.
I think he had Auburn.
I think he did too. Lest I speak out of turn.
Well, he's not here, so we'll say he had LSU.
Yeah.
Okay. We need to get an advantage because
probably why he hadn't shown up today.
That's probably true.
Because he was the only guy who had Michigan, so we got to look good in something.
Yeah. But, idiot.
Yes. But now, this game, as well as the Oregon Oklahoma game, everybody's talking about officiating. And I'm just going to sit there and say, yeah, that was a bad call in the pass interference in the fourth quarter. It should have been called against Auburn. It was bizarre they waved it off. But LSU had a much better chance to score toward the end of the game when Jamarcus Russell took a sack under a minute of play.
He's rolling out to his right. He's got no defenders around him, and he just slows down. And this guy catches up with him and drops him. He has every chance in the world. He has like 5-6 seconds. To throw the ball away, and instead they lose almost 20 seconds on the clock. How do you do that with a minute in play and you're trying to score?
Is he a sophomore or a junior?
I think he's got to be.
He's a junior. Yeah.
I think so.
I think somewhere on when I was doing my hours of intense research for this podcast, I saw someone write that Jamarcus Russell guarantees you a loss a season, and I think that is definitely true. I think I remember actually saying the same thing, which I'm going to take credit for right now, last year. Because, I mean, some of the plays, if you just watch it for a whole season, it's just baffling, the things that he does. I just can't believe that this guy, I mean, with so much talent, could
well, particularly they have Matt Flynn on the bench too, and he's not a bad little quarterback either. And they
well,
got
I know, but
kid.
I mean, he probably wins you a couple games each season too. I guess that's the whole thing. But I mean, LSU and when this top 10, you know, when you're in the top 10, you can't have a guy who's making these types of decisions for you. But I will say that I don't understand how, you know, why replays here if we don't get those plays called correctly, like that pass mm-hmm. interference. That's a game changer.
Well, right. And I think the rules, if it's a penalty, they don't review it. But that is kind of stupid because they should have reviewed that and they would have seen that, you know, the Auburn receiver or the Auburn defensive back was all over him before the ball got there. But it probably wouldn't have been caught anyway. It was the pass looked like it was kind of low coming in, but it was still, yeah. I still think they had the chance. And then you throw to the five with no time left.
That was awesome.
And that's the thing. I mean, our boy Tim Kelly is exactly mm-hmm. right. You got a quarterback who's probably got one of the strongest arms in college football. I mean, the guy can throw it on a frozen rope. He's got a quick release. He's huge. I mean, if you got to have somebody who's going to throw a 55-yard pass to the mm-hmm. end zone, this is the guy. And mm-hmm. they're down at, what, the 35?
Yeah.
And he's throwing just a 30-yard pass? I mean, come on. You got the gun to sling it in there another 10 yards to the middle of the end zone.
I'm just surprised they didn't call a tunnel screen right there. But
well, I mean, that would have made it as much sense. And it's not like he doesn't have the arm to throw it away. You know, just flick your wrist and toss it out. Don't take the sack.
Now, we're bad-mouthing LSU here. We're acting like Auburn didn't play a good game. But Auburn was – their defense was ridiculous. And when they had to move the ball, they moved the ball and got their touchdown. So,
right.
I have them pegged for the national championship. I am still sticking to that claim because even though they only scored 7 points, they held LSU to 3. So now they have a tough schedule coming up with Florida and do they get Tennessee this year, I believe?
Yeah, yeah. So in November,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly an easy road for them. And then they'll have to play Arkansas, who is, I mean, Razorbacks are struggling now, but they're going to get better because they're a young team. And
well, I'll tell you one thing that Auburn needs to do is there were two or three plays where there was just a ghost offensive lineman, and the linebacker and the defensive line both came through and raped Cox. I mean, it was brutal. Yeah. He came through, and by the time Cox had taken three steps, he was on the ground, untouched. I mean, just killed
and
by
that is-
LSU. I mean, so you can't have one of your most important pieces to your offensive puzzle getting drilled like that every game.
No, and that was something I thought about Auburn coming in, is they needed to replace a couple key figures on the line,
mm-hmm.
and I think they were finally testing a defense. They ultimately passed, but they're going to need to improve their production, because if they play a team like Florida or Tennessee who can put some points up there in a hurry, then they're going to be able to need to protect Cox so they can answer back. But
right. Because they're going to see teams that are going to blitz a quarterback like that. And if you're not mm-hmm. giving him any protection at all, mm-hmm. that's going to be trouble at some point.
So hopefully the Georgia defensive coordinators are listening to that, and yeah. Willie Martinez will know to send lots of people at Brandon Cox.
Rush him up the middle.
Non-stop. The other SEC action that day was Florida and Tennessee. I don't know who we picked in that game.
I picked Florida. Remember, I said Tennessee's flaky.
I think you did. I think no, I picked Florida.
I know I picked Florida.
But I don't want to take credit for it, so.
But I said Florida would win by 10.
It was a lot closer game than I thought it would be.
And that one had a weird officiating because there was a point in the second or third quarter where Tennessee intercepted a pass, returned it for a touchdown, mm-hmm. and they reversed it with the really, really iffy blow to the head call.
Mm-hmm.
When if you looked at the replay, it was pretty obvious the offensive lineman blocked him in that position into leak. So, but I was impressed Tennessee played as well as they did for when they did, and then I was impressed Florida came back. So, and that game could have gone either way.
Yeah, but I think that call that you're referring to, mm-hmm. J-Mac, was a makeup call for
what happened the previous play, because that was bad too.
Yeah, you had a return in for a touchdown. If I'm not getting
something,
my games confused,
no,
something happened.
Leap through an interception,
or an interception
return
for
a touchdown.
For a touchdown.
That was a return, but before that, there was another iffy call, but it went against Florida, and it probably shouldn't have gone against Florida.
Right.
And I don't know if it was offensive pass interference or if it was a phantom hold or something like that. But there was something where I remember watching it, and I went, oh, that's a terrible call. And then the next play happened, and I said, oh, my gosh, that's a worse call.
Yeah, one bad call does not deserve another.
No, not really. But the thing that is making me a little nervous now is that all last year said that offense could never work in the SEC, but it's starting to click a little better. Now, leak, and I think it's because they have Tebow there to spell leak at times.
But they brought Tim Tebow in, and he would run.
He ran the option well.
He did it well. I mean, he
that's why they were so excited about him coming in the first place. Yeah. Apparently, he sent that text message, apparently, that after last year, saying, after Leak blew one of those, I can't remember what game he blew, and supposedly Meyer sent a text message to Tebow saying pretty much to the effect, like, see, this is why we need you, and then, like, it got out on some Alabama talk radio show. So, anyway, I guess he was right.
Yeah, he ran the option very well. I mean, it was sort of the only good thing I guess defenses can take into account now is the fact that when he runs that play, or when you see Tebow come in the game, he's not handing the ball off. He's going to run that zone read QB option. Yep. So
when the defense collapses and comes in, he's going to float around the outside.
And it's only a matter of time before the defense mm-hmm. start picking that up. And he's a talented quarterback. I think Florida's offense is going to do a heck of a lot better with him there. And it's sort of a shame for Leak because, I mean, Leak throws about as perfect of a pass as I've seen in college football in the past couple of years. Yeah. And he just hasn't been utilized. I mean, had he actually been under Spurrier, they would have rolled, I think.
They may have won a national championship by now.
Mm-hmm.
But I literally think his arm is beautiful. It's a very well-sculpted arm.
It is. And he's worked out a lot in the past year.
Just that one arm, though. He just lifts that. The other one, just nothing. It's a noodle.
It really is. Well, you know, fortunately, he's right-handed, so.
Yeah.
But so Florida looked good. Tennessee looked good. We talked briefly about the Oregon-Oklahoma game because that was about the horrible officiating in that game, which Pac-10 refs have suspended those guys now. And the Oregonian, one of y'all mentioned earlier, is considering suspending or is considering nullifying the victory, has asked if they should nullify the victory.
The Oklahoma president is asking, requesting that the game be nullified. It doesn't count as a win or a loss for either team. And then now the Oregonian newspaper is saying that the replay official, which I don't know why the Oregonian is even printing this, they should have just left it a dead story because considering this is bad news for Oregon. But apparently the replay official had nothing but like small still shots or like really poor technology. He wasn't getting the ABC live feed when he was checking these replays. So, I mean, it seems pretty insane that college football institutes this replay system and then they give him, like, black and white, Zapruder film or something, It's like, let's get the live feed in there. I mean, everyone in the nation can see it except the one guy that really needs to be making these calls. But, I mean, I don't know if you should nullify the game.
I don't think you should nullify the game.
The only way to nullify it is if they go back and nullify Georgia Tech.
One of the things that you gotta love and hate about the college game is you got, how many different college programs playing every weekend, how many, six refs per game times how many hundred games?
That you're playing so at all different levels.
You're talking about all these guys. I mean, they're amateur refs. They're not professional refs by the time and they're guys that are going to suck, that are going to make bad calls. So I think if you're coming to a college football game, you got to expect a bad call or two. And if you're an away team, you got to expect some calls that are going for the home team because if those guys are feeling the pressure of the crowd, everybody's into it, whatever, I mean, you got to think that they're not perfect. They're going to get swayed one way or the other.
Sure. I think Steve Spurrier would disagree with you, considering he said there are, those 800 clips that were never called against Georgia in the South Carolina game, so.
But Steve Spurrier is an idiot.
Well, that's true. There is that.
Well, I guess, I understand that, but, I mean, then why have replay? It's just like, I could accept a bad call, but now if you have somebody supposedly checking this up in the booth and it's they're gonna make everything all better and they still don't do it, then that makes it even worse.
Right. If half the teams or three quarters of them can have the live feed, why does this one team, why they gotta have Polaroids run out by the popcorn dude up to the booth so they can see what happened?
And incidentally, this reminded me of this that we weren't gonna originally talk about, but I heard on the way home today. Did you hear that Brett Musburger gave out
the play USC call, signal.
John David Booty's play signals? with 10 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter, is like telling him how he like supposedly like checks off. Or,
well, the point I want to mention is how completely Southern Cal is it that the signal for doing it is an upside down hang ten sign.
Yep.
I mean, people, can you fit into the stereotype anymore? I mean, do something
Hollywood.
I mean, do something different, like, you know, I don't know, sachet with your feet or something.
But yeah,
that is great.
What I love is as well is they said that. Because Musburger, it was in the context of Troy Smith does this, and it was either tap his helmet or do something like that. But I'm like, well, why isn't Ohio State mad?
Yeah.
Because he gave away their signal as well. So, yes, that was, yeah, good.
That was great.
Good call there, Tim.
But not quite as great as Kentucky's vicious three-game series, which was constituted their entire season in 1881, all versus Transylvania, which I don't know if that's a place in Kentucky or the country where Dracula's from, but... Anyway, the first game went Kentucky's way 7-1, which begs the question, how did you score one? And then the second game, a nail-biter, 2-1 to Transylvania.
There's going to have to have been a rule change. I'm going to go on a limb and put that out there. But
so the rubber match, again, with Transylvania, going to Transylvania, 3-2. Kentucky finishes 1-2, and I think people are still bitter about it back there.
Well, I think it really set the tone for the whole program. I mean, Tim Couch and Hal Mumme tried to change the atmosphere there.
They did. And that still is why when they go out into the field, there's a big sign that says, remember Transylvania. And they all slap it on the way out.
That's where that comes from.
Yeah.
Play like a champion, remember Transylvania.
Yeah. Just people,
I like that.
Yeah, people just thought that Rich Brooks was a big Bram Stoker fan. Which may be true, too, but I think this is the real reason.
Real quick, we're going to talk about, because we've got a bunch of other stuff to talk about, and we've been rambling for 20 minutes, and this happens all the time here. Miami-Louisville. Miami looks bad. Louisville, even though they lost their really two Heisman bad. Guys, looked really good. The thing, only thing I really want to say about this game is that before the game, Miami's players are stomping on the Louisville logo. You know, that works a lot of people up. It doesn't really bother me because 18, 19, 20, 20-year-old kids, they get full of motion. What bothered me about it was the Miami coaches were there with them, encouraging them to do it. And then they keep showing the clip of poor Bobby Petrino yelling, and I'm thinking, he's not the guy overreacting. He's just defending his school, his program, his players, and trying to keep them from tearing the heads off of Miami, and then they proceeded to go out there and beat the heck out of them.
Take them to the woodshed and just...
Smoked them.
Just smoked them. I mean, smoke them. Yeah, I loved it. I've got no love for Miami. It was great to see them just get pounded.
I don't mind logo jumping, but I think you should... reserve it to after the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think there's really any reason to do it before the game. Unless you're just trying to loosen it up for kickoffs.
Well, the grass is really tight.
It is.
They've got to make it more spongy.
Right. That paint, it just really kind of pulls it all together.
Maybe that's what they're doing. They're just like, and the groundskeepers were right in the middle of them. You just couldn't see them.
Why are you like, getting so harder? Mad? I don't know why you're getting mad. We're just helping you out. So anyway, so our consensus here is Miami is really not good. Louisville is, even though they lost Bush and Brom, they're not bad, and they could be pretty good.
So do you think Miami's even going to a bowl this year?
They'll go to a bowl because they get to play NC State and Wake Forest.
They get to play the rest of the ACC.
And the ACC is so incredibly horrible this year, they'll be able to get a bowl game. They'll finish 8-3. They'll fire Coker because he didn't win a national title. They'll bring in... I don't know. They'll bring in some NFL coach who just wants to get back there. Or they'll make a pitch for Rick, but they can't afford him. So.
Oh, yeah. Nah.
But that ain't going to happen. Hopefully not. So, anyway, that's our 24-minute look back at the separation Saturday. It was a lot to talk about. We had to ramble for a while.
Sure. So, I have 6 minutes left to finish everything else.
We might go a little bit over. Like we did last week.
Finish important things like the inventor of the Swiffer is from Toledo.
Really?
Carl Ron. That's their distinguished alumni.
You know.
Toledo's really hurting in the college football encyclopedia.
They should potentially change their nickname from the Rockets to the Swiffers, I think.
I know. Ooh. They would clean up the competition.
Wait, Toledo, aren't they the Mud Hens?
Toledo is the Rockets.
Oh, they're the Rockets. Who's the Mudhens?
No, that's their minor league team.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
It's all right. We're confusing sports. It happens all the time. All right, we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to try to move fast, and we'll flow these next two topics together. But Georgia's defense has pitched two consecutive shutouts, and we'll have Matt actually look up there. Mark that page. But look up when the last time that happened. I want to say it was either 80 or 82.
1980. Yeah.
Happened to be the national championship season.
I think they said that on the way out of the stadium.
And who was the...
there was a freshman that year.
Yeah, and who was the defensive genius?
Oh, that guy. Bald dude.
Bald dude. Yeah. Irk Russell.
Irk Russell. Yeah. He wasn't bad.
His spirit might be still stomping around the stadium.
You know, and ironically enough, we had... Well, actually, there's no irony involved in this statement, but we have bald dude roaming the sideline now as defensive coordinator. Poor Willie Martinez can't... Mm. He's follically challenged, so...
But, he took a lot of hell at the end of last year, so hopefully this will carry on through the whole year and redeem him.
Yeah, the Banner Herald had a good story talking about how the defense had took it personally what West Virginia did to him, and also people forget about Auburn moved the ball at will against him in the game last year.
Oh, I don't think anybody forgets about that.
Well, Tim doesn't forget about that, but I think West Virginia's that was so dramatic and so just. I mean, it was obvious how much speed they had and how they really took everybody. I mean, took everybody by surprise, but I think they've really taken that personally, and they've changed it. And I think a lot of it's also come as we have more depth at linebacker. Georgia's got, they're young, but they've got a ton of depth in the secondary. That secondary is going to be very good for a very long time.
A little bit less depth now that Thomas Flowers is out for the year.
A little bit less depth, but they still...
Yeah, I know, but yeah, we still got
Allen, and then they've got Prince Miller's played art. He's played pretty solidly. Paul Oliver is arguably the best cover corner they
Brian
have.
Evans.
Mm-hmm. Donovan Keelan Baldwin. Keelan Johnson. And then C.J. Bird, who I think is going to become a pretty good ball player for him, if he's not already now. So, but I think Matt's now just enjoying the record portion of it.
Yeah.
He might offer his own random facts in a few minutes.
That's my job.
Well, I'll tell you what, with Colorado coming up, this weekend, and with Colorado not being the team
that's good,
that's good. I mean, about the only thing to say about them is they're bringing a buffalo between the hedges this week.
That's pretty cool.
And right now, they're on their way.
You know,
they left this morning.
Did you see on the cover of the Red and Black this morning on the student newspaper? They traced out the path that the Buffalo will be following, and at periodic points they would offer little comments on what's going to happen at their stops, and they used bits from the Oregon Trail video game.
So, nice, like, great game.
Yeah. And so when they had said like they stopped in Mississippi, it says crossing Mississippi River crossing. It's like Colorado decides to caulk and forward. That was the funniest thing I've seen in the Red and Black.
That's awesome.
You know, they modified the Oregon Trail game when I got like my first computer back when I was in high school, and it was in color and it was more interactive. Yeah, that was not good at all. I missed the green monitor in the Apple.
Yeah, when you had to go punch and you had to press the space bar, and the little DVD would fly out.
That was awesome. Excellent.
I'd spend all my money on ammo, and we'd hunt every time we just
for the
every
fun
time.
Of
we're
it.
Just going to stop and hunt. I want to kill the bear.
You know what was disappointing about that game was the fact that you would be able to shoot and collect like 874 pounds of meat. However, you could only take like 20 pounds back with you. And I'm thinking, well, I just wasted about a whole day of my travel here killing bear and buffalo. I would hate it when you'd go out there, though, and it was just like a little squirrel jumping around.
These are the lessons you learned from the Oregon Trail.
Right.
I did that one game with my family, and I think my father died of like pneumonia or like something random like lupus really early in
cholera.
That was a bad one. Cholera. Yeah,
They never gave you the option to eat your dead comrades.
You could have saved a lot of ammo that way.
I think that came in the third edition.
Once they added color to the game, they probably modified it a bit.
Right, that was the mature version of the Oregon Trail.
Somehow we've moved from Georgia defense to the Oregon Trail, and I like it.
One of the things they said about old Ralphie is that if Ralphie leaves any excrement on the field, that the Georgia folks don't have to worry about cleaning that up. That the handlers are going to get that.
Oh. You guys say classy, Boulder. That's good.
He's only going to be out there. He's going to lead him out in the field, and then they put him right back
taking
in the truck.
Taking him back in the truck. And
load him up and head back out.
That's it. He just runs him out of the field. So if you want to see Ralphie, you better get there early.
Yeah.
Well, I will make sure that I'm in my seat early that day. So
Anyway.
Well, we're going to move. One of the big main defensive players to Georgia is a linebacker, Tony Taylor. He is a local player from Oconee County, and we try to do some high school sports at the blog, and we haven't had a chance to talk much about high school sports here on our second podcast. But Tony is a linebacker for Georgia, starting linebacker. He's been through a lot of adversity, had a couple injuries here. But Tony is probably... I saw very good players. Monte Williams of Commerce was one. Tyson Browning, also to Oconee County, was one. Barry Elder played basketball for Morgan County. He was an excellent player. Played for Tech for a few years. But Tony, well-rounded, top to bottom. I've never seen anything like him. He had like 800 yards rushing his senior season. He played running back, receiver, tight end, I think.
Yeah, caught 25 passes for 356 yards and 2 touchdowns. As a junior, recorded 91 tackles, 2 interceptions. All-area pick as a goalie in soccer. In his first year competing in the sport, a 2-year starter in basketball, recorded quadruple doubles in a game as a senior.
He scored
all around.
I think he's the incredible all-time leading scorer in Oconee County basketball history. I know he scored more than 1,000, and they had a ceremony honoring him at Oconee County. And then, you know, what's funny is basketball-wise, I rank him as one of the 5 best high school basketball players I ever saw. He single-handedly beat Clark Central 2 different times when they had very talented teams. He, I mean, kept him when Quinton Moses was the starting power forward, and Quinton was the Banner Herald Basketball Player of the Year his senior season, and Quinton was unstoppable as well. But Tony just, I mean, he kept him in the games. Oconee had no business being in those games against Cedar Shoals. And Tony was just, and the funny thing was, you look at him, he's a good-sized kid. What, he's, you know, about 230 pounds.
6'1", 237.
So yeah. In high school, you know, you're expecting he's going to play more of a forward position because of his size and his athletic ability.
Probably 200 in high school.
He played point guard, and he was, I mean, one of the best point guards I've ever seen play. And he just was able to take over a game. He could, one game he'd score 40 points, pull down 16 rebounds. The next game, he'd dish out 15 assists and score maybe 12 points, but did a little bit of everything. On top of that, his junior season, I believe, he's bored during the spring, has a class with a soccer coach, tells the guy, I need something to keep my time going here, and I don't really want to do track. Well, why don't you come play soccer? He comes out and is the best goalie in the area for 2 years and just picks it up. And, I mean, leads Oconee County to the state playoffs. So... what we're starting here at the Cover 2 podcast blog conglomerate is that we want Oconee County to retire the number 20 for all male athletic programs. I don't know how feasible this is. I remember talking to Russ Triaga, who was the former basketball coach at Oconee County. He's a friend of mine. He said he broached that. He said the policy at Oconee was they don't do that kind of thing. But we'd like for either the 1 or 1,000 listeners we have, because, you know, we really can't keep track of that right now. Track down who the AD is, the principal, these people at Oconee County, find the president of the Touchdown Club, shoot them an email, call the school, send them a letter, tell them to retire number 20 at Oconee County in honor of Tony Taylor. Because the kid's going to play in the NFL, he probably won't be a first-round or second-round pick, but he's going to get drafted, he's going to contribute like Will Witherspoon or Tony Gilbert, and he's going to play very well for a team. He's going to do very well on Sundays. And he's the kind of example you want to have these kids coming up in your program come through. So we're starting that push here, and we'd like for you folks to continue that, along with the fact that Tony, heck of a nice kid. He was I really enjoyed covering him. He was very quiet. Looks a little like Emmanuel Lewis in the face, just substantially larger.
And A little bit.
It's comforting, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want Webster hitting you, I guess.
But, well, no, but if you were just hanging out with him, I wouldn't mind hanging out with Webster.
But you definitely want the success of the young Emmanuel Lewis rather than the older Emmanuel Lewis.
Sure, you don't want to go for that reality or the...
You don't want to be a security guard at a video store.
There was a big, great write-up in the Banner Herald last weekend about, not Emmanuel Lewis, but about Tony Taylor. So if you can get your hands on that, or just go back on
online,
the game day section did a whole big cover story on Tony Taylor. So.
Yeah, Texas was the guy who did that story, and he talked about what was kind of well known in the paper back in the day was that Tony and Quinton Moses had a long standing feud. And I saw them get into a shoving match in a Coney Cedar game, and I was sitting there thinking, this is going to be a good little scrap right here. But they've patched things up and are now part of that Georgia defense we were talking about. But so anyway, we're making the push for Tony, retire that jersey. If you've listened, he's a good kid, means well, does well, is a very solid contributor for the Georgia football team, and he's going to play in the NFL, so we'd like to see his jersey get retired. But well, our next thing is we're going to pick some games, and if last week was Separation Saturday, this week is, man, this is incredibly boring Saturday. Because there aren't really any good games. I picked.
But there's always going to be a good game in there.
That's true. I think before we get into this, Tim, is there any sort of anything you've seen? You're on Temple right now. Is there any facts from Temple? I know Bill Cosby's a fan.
No.
Would you like to move on?
I flipped through Temple. No, Boston College played some interesting teams in their history. And I think we should revive their football teams. Football teams such as the College of Osteopathy.
Wow.
Or Camp Bumpkin. I mean, these are teams that I would love to see Georgia play. You know, wouldn't you love to see a nice UGA bumpkin matchup at Sanford Stadium?
That would be good.
On a fall Saturday?
Well, and if you play the College of what, Osteopathy,
which I'm not even sure what osteopathy is. Well, is that bones or something?
It's got to be something. That would be good because then if you have a high ankle sprain, you've got the right guy there.
I mean, you got to be thinking, they got to want to come get a paycheck, right?
Yeah. Let the trainers take the day off.
Yeah.
And they would just fall down, and then you were like, dude, you hit me, you fix me.
The trainers could go tailgate. And we're going to give a quick plug. We're going to do shameless tailgate promotion here. If you're one of the handful of listeners, the three of us do happen to tailgate together, so we'd invite you to come by, say hello to us, say we heard you guys ramble on the internet. We're on Sanford Drive. Tim, you want to take over where exactly we're located at?
Sanford Drive. We're in front of the actual side entrance of Mary Linden Hall on the Sanford Stadium side of the South Campus parking deck. So
it's a good time.
Yeah.
We're going to try to do some nice food menus as well. We got a couple things planned out. Buffalo wings and bison burgers this week?
I think probably so. I mean, that only makes sense.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. I'm convinced. In honor of Thanksgiving for the Tech game, I am frying a turkey. This has been met with much skepticism at the tailgate site.
Yeah, I just see a lot of deep fried hands and some deep fried ankles.
And J Mac, you've already had a bad encounter with some grease this year, so
I burned my finger pretty bad on doing a country fried steak for the wife, so that wasn't good. But
what about Rocky Mountain oysters this weekend?
Ooh, wow. That's coming out of left field.
We'll have to look into that.
Where do you find those around here?
Well, is Ralphie's coming into town, right? Isn't that?
Well, that Ralphie's a girl, though.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. Well,
unless she's bringing her boyfriend, I think we're going to
we'll just
be a little hard to find some.
That's a whole different kind of delicacy, I think.
Right. We're going to have to call somebody over at the School of Agriculture.
But anyone who does decide to come by our tailgate, we will get some Rocky Mountain oysters, and if you want to sit with us, you have to have one.
Okay, yes, it'll be...
We're not having any, but you'll have to have one.
Yeah, just be sure you say you heard us here, and...
and then you got a big
play. Because otherwise we're going to go, who is this random dude walking up right now? my shtick for the year, I've determined, after bringing Schaefer's Light to the first game, is I will bring a random, inexpensive, widely criticized 6-pack or 12-pack of beer to the tailgate. I was unable to come to the UAB game. I was going to bring Dixie beer. Now I'm thinking something in the Stroh's family, perhaps. Tim's always been partial to the Natural Light, so I think that's...
I was going to say, I've been bringing inexpensive beer for years.
if you got Colorado coming, you might as well bring Coors Light. That's cheap beer, isn't it?
It's cheap beer, but that's got a good name, though. I'd like to go...
It's commercialized, but it's...
We'll ponder it. There's some things I could possibly do. Because Stroh's, I don't want to break out Stroh's early, because Stroh's charm is they sell it in a 15-pack.
You might need to bring Stroh's to Mississippi State.
Yeah, that'd be good. I think we had this discussion before.
Or, actually, probably for Mississippi State, you need to bring MD 2020.
Ooh, gosh.
It's going to be a long day.
I
had a bad problem with that during a wedding preparation party 5 years back.
Actually, Mississippi State, Southpaw.
Definitely, because of the Bulldog.
Bizarro
Bulldogs. We can do that. It's settled. It is
left-handed, yeah.
Wait, what was the beer with the bulldog on it? That wasn't South Pole.
Red Dog.
Red Dog.
That's what we got to do for Mississippi State. South Pole.
But they're the Maroon Dogs.
We'll take a vote. We'll have, yeah. Please email to the site, post on the blog, and vote for what we think the cheap beer
South
should be.
South Pole, Red Dog.
Literally right now, we have started a new interactive contest. So when you see this, please either post something or send us an email about what you think.
Don't you have pole manufacturing capabilities? Can't you put something on there?
I just do Blogger. I don't really know that kind of stuff. Maybe, you know, Kyle at Dog Sports has much more know-how. I'll talk to him. Maybe he can help us out. Well, we're going to go to our picks now. We got, I think, 7 games because we'll do Colorado, Georgia last. The first one, I guess the best game this weekend will be Notre Dame, Michigan State. We'll start with Matt. The Irish got a rebound, and they don't really have the easiest opponent because Michigan State's given them fits the past couple years.
Well, I'm struggling with this because I really want to see Notre Dame just go start reeling. I want to see them lose again. I'd like to see Michigan State win. I think Notre Dame, though, will rebound. I think they'll put things together. They're going to spend some time this week looking at film, finding out what the offensive line needs to do, protect the quarterback. And they'll play probably a better game than they played against Michigan. And I think they'll pull it out. I think it's going to be close. I'd say Notre Dame maybe by 3.
I'm going to say Notre Dame, of course. I've always been a Notre Dame fan, so this is a biased pick, I would suppose. So don't, you know, bet on it. Yeah, I think St. Brady will lead him to victory, and it's going to be a glorious comeback for the Catholics from South Bend.
I like it. It comes full circle right there. That's the second reference of St. Brady today. I think Notre Dame's going to win, too. Michigan State's a good team. It's going to give them a scare, but Notre Dame, one, they're going to be mad about how they played last week.
Yep.
Weiss will have them focused, and yep. I think talent-wise, they're going to be ahead of Michigan State. Yep. So I'll go with the Irish in that one. Bama at Arkansas, it's really too – I don't want to say Bama's underachieving because they blew out, I guess, Louisiana Monroe last week.
Yeah.
But they've got a lot of issues. They're a young team. They're trying to put things together. Arkansas, the same boat, so –
Well, I mean, you got Arkansas, who's apparently for the rest of the season going to start a true freshman at quarterback, which is
that's dumb.
That's stupid.
Who does that?
That's just pathetic.
Mitch Mustaine, he didn't look bad this last week. He's still got a lot to learn. They, you know, he got McFadden as a running threat. This is a toss-up for me. I don't know that either one of these teams really looks better. I'm going to pick Bama just because I like Bama better. I'll say Bama by 10.
I think Arkansas, Arkansas struggled, I think, more than I expected. I thought they would be a little bit more potent on offense. And I think Alabama's still got a good defense. They just have zero offense. So, I don't know. I'm going to say the good defense beats the mediocre offense. And Bama's going to win 17-12.
Wow.
Nice.
not 2-1.
No, I'm reserving that for my Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Bama as well. Their defense is pretty solid. They have a good running back in Darby. Arkansas still is working some things out as far as on their offense, and they're gonna be. I think I was jumping the gun on they'd be a good team this year. I think down the road they will be when McFadden and the line comes together. Mustaine's got a year or two in the system, but. Yeah, I think Bama's going to come through. And I think Bama, by the end of the year, they're going to be a good team. Though, you know, the lack of offense in Alabama is sort of a Mike Shula. I think that's his shtick. I think he tries to find a way to win games like 10-7. And he goes
that's a pretty bad shtick as a coach. Here's my thing. I got no offense. You're going to love it. Every game's going to be close.
This is great.
Do you love 7-5? I do.
They're like, absolutely, come on.
Okay, I don't even know why I put this game down there. I think I just wanted to make sure we had, I don't know, a decent number of games. Kentucky at Florida. Let's take this really quick.
Florida is going to absolutely destroy Kentucky. I say they put up 30 points on them. I mean, easy. Kentucky just can't handle the firepower. Defense for Florida is going to be too overpowering for Kentucky's inept offense.
I can go with that. What do you got, Tim?
I'm going to have to, you know, yeah, I'm going to go with Florida, but I got to give a shout-out to my friend David from. Can I give a shout out?
Sure, yeah. We do that all the time.
From law school, he's the biggest Kentucky fan I've ever met, and he actually likes Kentucky football, it seems, almost as much as Kentucky basketball, which is a pretty rare breed.
You don't see that too often.
No. And, you know, he was talking them up after they stormed out over Ole Miss last week, so I'm going to say it's going to be a little bit closer. You know, it's going to be like 42-17.
Okay. It's a nail biter. Yeah, Florida's going to kill Kentucky. That's all I got for it. They'll score 40 points easy against them. The next one, again, it looks better on paper. Not really that good of a game because Penn State's young. Penn State at Ohio State.
Yeah, I think Penn State, they don't have a chance against Ohio State. I mean, pretty much, I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
Joe Pa, love you, but.
They're young.
They're young. You got it's a rebuilding year. You lost a bunch of really good guys, and you're just not going to be able to handle Ohio State on the offensive or defensive sides of the ball. They just offensively, Ohio State has just too many weapons. And Ted Ginn, he's going to run. He's going to score. He's going to score, and he's going to score again.
So. Which is impressive considering he's about 5'1".
Yeah, he's not that big of a guy, but yeah. He's. Pretty fast.
And I can say that with confidence, being about 5'4". Or 5'7".
I don't trust anyone under 5'5".
That's true. All right, Tim, what do you got?
You know, it's Big Ten, so I don't really care. But yeah, I haven't really watched too much of them, but I guess Ohio State.
I like that. I'm going to give the exact same thing as Tim. Ohio State's going to beat Penn State in this one. Again, this is week two. Virginia at Georgia Tech. It's a Thursday night game. Tech has played fairly. They played Notre Dame pretty tough, but then they had lackluster showings. Virginia lost to Western Michigan last week, so there you have it. Again, we said this was a bad week in football, and it really is a bad week in football.
Hey, in case Chan Gailey's checking out the feed here, by the way, you got a big receiver. I can't remember his name. I think he's pretty good.
Manute Bol.
Throw to him. Throw all day long. They can't stop him.
Quick little fades. Doesn't matter. Just throw the ball up to him.
If you would have done it more, you could have beat Notre Dame.
I like the high-pitched whistle. So you're going to pick Tech, then.
I'm taking Tech because I think Georgia Tech's suspect. I hate them, but I think – Virginia drinks Chardonnay. I mean, they're a bunch of pansies. I don't think they can hang with Georgia Tech.
I like it.
Well, you know, few things say college football, like Thursday night in Atlanta, right? So,
although Georgia Tech is, what, 0-2 the last couple years on Thursday night? They're not – it's not a good time for them.
Yeah. I don't know. Virginia, I haven't really watched them that much, but, yeah, I don't think they're all that. So, yeah, I'll go with Tech reluctantly.
All right, I'll pick Tech as well. All right, two more on tap here. We'll try to roll through them real quick. Arizona State at California. This could be a pretty good game because Arizona State cracked, I think, the blog poll, actually, in a lot of voters' ballots. And then Cal has bounced back fairly well from the Tennessee loss. They've had a couple lackluster showings, but they've got Marshawn Lynch. They got a good team. So that's our Pac-10 token game of the week.
Yeah, I got to go for Cal on this one just because it increases Tennessee's strength of schedule, which is in turn going to increase Georgia's strength of schedule when Georgia beats Tennessee. So that's my rationale.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go with Cal just because that's I know more about them just because they played Tennessee. So, sorry, don't.
I'm going to be on the outlier here. I'm going to pick Arizona State in this one because nice. I think they're coming together. They got their quarterback, you know, after – you know, lobbying his teammates to make him the starter over the guy who won the starting job. You know, he's come through pretty well for him. And then lastly, but definitely not least, is Colorado at Georgia. A game where at the beginning of the year I said, man, this has 5:45 ESPN2 written all over it, and here we are, Lincoln Financial.
Yeah.
So, because as I believe it was on Paul Westerdog's blog, Georgia has morphed into being a Big Ten school. We like kicking off at about 12:30 or 1 now. So, what do you think is going to happen here Saturday?
Well, thank you, Colorado, for being a terrible team this year. I mean, we've got the possibility of a game with some national interest, pulling in some folks from the West Coast, and you guys are sucking it up. So, I think Georgia is going to come out and going to play a good game, The defense has been playing extremely well. I think we got a chance for another shutout. I don't think that's going to happen again. Three in a row, probably a little bit too much to ask for. I hope this is a game where the offense has an opportunity to really kind of get some more things together, to flow a little bit, get in some rhythms with the passing game especially, run the ball, control the clock. I think Georgia's going to win this easy.
Well, I know. I've heard a lot of bad stuff about Colorado, how bad they are. But when you hear a CU's fight song, fight CU down the field, CU must win. Fight, fight for victory. CU knows no defeat. We'll roll up a mighty score. Never give in. Shoulder to shoulder, we'll fight, 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 fight. That's going to be pretty intimidating for UGA, I'm going to think. But, I think UGA another shutout, 42-0.
I think they're gonna Colorado's gonna score just because you can't bring Ralphie all this way and disappoint the poor girl. So Colorado's gonna score, but they don't have Darren Hagan and Eric Bieniemy in the sideline anymore. It's not 1991, and I just think that Georgia's gonna roll in this game. I do agree though that they need this game and the next week's game against Ole Miss are good chances for Stafford to really get the system down and play well.
Yeah.
And that's going to help him going into Tennessee and then that tougher, more difficult stretch against Florida and Auburn and Tech to close the season.
I mean, it's fun to see Stafford get out and run, and that's exciting, but God, I don't want him to get out there and get hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, throw when you can, throw the ball away if you need to, and let the running game carry you along. I mean, win's a win.
Yeah, if it's ugly, it's still a win, and to be unbeaten rolling into the Tennessee game would be really impressive.
That's gonna be nice.
For a team that had to replace a lot, and has absolutely no depth right now on offensive line. Yeah. So we've rolled through our picks. We have urged you to retire Tony Taylor's jersey to Coney County, his number, and we randomly in the middle of this decided that we're gonna start selecting what kind of inexpensive cheap beer I bring to our tailgates. And we happen to invite you there, so we could see nobody. We could see 400 people we don't really know. Just make sure you tip us when you come. But that's it for Matt, who was pinch-hitting for the realist today. We might ask him to come back. He did pretty good. He seemed to enjoy himself. And our boy Tim Kelly, as always, the champion that he is. Got his 3D glasses from REM. He's good to go.
Yep.
And I'm J-Mac, and we will just talk to you guys next week at some point.